Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan. With me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
It's upon us. It's happened. It happened last night.
It's like Christmas morning.
It is. Did you get everything you wanted?
Got a lot. I don't know. you never really get what you wanted. But yeah, we got our first two episodes of Star Trek Discovery. This is the day after. And we're just kind of trying to make sense of what we saw and what we think about it.
Yeah, we're gonna go for first couple minutes about just kind of a general overview of what we thought, just initial, you know, first reactions, and then we'll go into the spoiler territory,
where you can shut it off if you have not seen it yet. So we got Star Trek Discovery. It aired on CBS last night.
That's about 20-something minutes late.
Yeah, about 20 minutes late. It aired September 24th, obviously 2017. And the football game pushed it off for that, you know, like you said, 15, 20 minutes late.
I just really wish they would have played it right after the football game. I didn't realize 60 minutes was supposed to come on in between.
Kind of a dumb thing.
Because I thought the whole reason they wanted to put it on after the football game was so that people wouldn't change the channel.
Right. Well, and then on top of that, I guess people who weren't watching it live were on their All Access. It was bumped as well, so it should have kept the same.
Oh, yeah, I was really upset. Whenever it was bumped on live TV, I went to All Access, and it was also bumped, and I was like... Really?
Why? I don't know why they made that decision. I think the 60 minutes episode, like you were saying before, was pretty divisive. So
I'm just like, that's. I mean, if that doesn't want to make people turn off the television, I don't know what does.
I mean, you were. I think you said before we started the show what they should have done is the football game and then Discovery.
Yeah, that would have like been. But if you had to put something in between. Throw in the cage.
Well, I don't think they're going to dig that old chestnut out.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Just something. Like something Star Trek. Like or like some kind of like behind the scenes.
They should have done a behind the scenes. Yeah, they should have done like a 10-minute thing. But and they should have hyped it way more. But that's us, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking this whole premiere. But first of all, my first impressions, it's a... completely cinematic. It's beautiful. The acting is wonderful. The imagery is awesome. So without getting into anything that's going to give anything away for anybody, if you have not seen the first or second episode, because we're going to be talking about both of those, it's well worth
it's
watching.
It's really just one episode, to be honest.
It's one long episode that should have...
It should have, like...
They could have encapsulated, maybe they could have compressed it a little more. And there's other things I want to get into as we go further on. But visually, you are getting probably the best series that you've ever seen.
It is, yeah. But the previews pretty much told us that. This is the best-looking television show I've ever seen.
And it doesn't disappoint. Like, there's no point as, like, it kind of, like, it gets, like, crappy.
Although my girlfriend kind of was, like, didn't like the first shot of T'Kuvma. Because the opening shot is T'Kuvma, and he's talking in Klingon, and, like... He's sweating a lot, so you can see, like, the paint where it's supposed to be, where it's supposed to attach to the prosthetic.
Yeah.
Like, you can clearly see it. And I wasn't really paying attention to it, but she was like, that looked, she's like, it was taking her out of the experience. And it was weird because, I mean, in all the other shots, he looks great. But that one shot, he's, like, sweating.
But they're right on his face.
Yeah.
Like, way in his face, so... it's really a beautiful, the acting, I really can't take anything away from the acting. I think the acting's all there.
The acting was great. It's super cinematic. It was shot beautifully. just my initial takeaway from just the first episode.
Yeah, if you just that's all you watch, you didn't sign up for All Access.
If you didn't, if you're someone who's like on the fence about Star Trek, you didn't sign up for All Access, and you're not a Star Trek fan, and you watch that first episode to as a tease to come on. I don't think it was enough, personally. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but the way it ends, it just kind of stops.
It didn't even
feel like a cliffhanger. It just felt like it kind of stopped.
Okay, so I'm kind of coming around to the way you're thinking about this. You said originally, like a couple weeks ago or months ago, that Star Trek Discovery has to come out so hot out the gate, it's going to blow everybody's mind. And while, yes, visually it's beautiful, and the acting's great, I think the story's a little slow, a little plotting at points. Like, it's just, and I mean plotting, like slowly driving. You know, it's not. It's kind of grinding away slowly. It's not flashing.
It didn't pop. It wasn't 2,000 arrows in your chest. Like, oh my god, I've got to rewind that.
Right.
Like American Gods was. This was very like. I mean.
Yeah. When you're talking,
It was very Star Trek.
When you're talking Game of Thrones, when you're talking American Gods and stuff like that, this is just not. They weren't. It wasn't so amazing that she was like, "Wow, I have to see the next episode. I have to sign up to CBS All Access,"
which is what they needed to do to get the non-Trekkie into it. And even some casual Trekkies that messaged me on Facebook, like immediately after the first episode, they're like, "I'm gonna have to live vicariously through." They tagged me, David Duncan, because it just was like, it wasn't enough to make them pay for the All Access. And I felt the same. I was watching the episode through the lens of trying to be an outsider and what an outsider would think. So like that colored my entire impression.
No,
the
it's
first
a good
episode.
Way to look at it. I agree.
Because I didn't want to look at it as a Star Trek fan because, I mean, this show hinges on people needing to sign up for it All Access so people can see it, so it can be successful, so it can go on to get more seasons. And so this is how I'm trying to view it. And I feel like it missed the mark. And I feel it's a shame that they didn't make it a regular full 2-hour pilot. If it was a full 2-hour pilot, I think that would have been enough.
Or an hour and a half. You could have cut down what they did, made it an hour and a half.
You could have cut down the banter on the Shishinzo easily. Yeah.
And I know they're trying to establish characters, and that's fine. I get it.
But the thing is, it was Star Trek. So as a Star Trek fan, it worked. It was very Star Trek-y. All the sounds were there. The character interactions were there. It was a little Orville-ish to me, like all the weird, like sarcastic banter between them. I was like, that's something I would expect from the Orville, not from Star Trek.
Right.
So it was kind of weird.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a couple things they could have cut for time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there was quite a few things they could have cut down in the beginning. The very beginning shot, and I won't give anything away, but when they're on the planet with Michael Burnham, character and the captain.
Michael Giorgio.
Yeah. While it was beautiful and interesting, I kind of walked away with kind of going like, did I learn anything here about the characters other than, Micah Berman kind of feeling that this is her mentor, the captain is her mentor, which I would assume that anyways, or at least some kind of, that she looked up to her at some point,
I think the problem with the opening scene is that it was featured in almost all the trailers. So most of the important dialogue from this was in the trailers, so it wasn't anything new to us.
Right. But,
And that sequence was a lot longer than I thought it was going to be.
So that's kind of just where I'm at with it. It's not... If you like sci-fi and if you like Star Trek, I think you'll still want it, but it's just the problem is there's such a glut out there, and they're fighting for people's dollars, and this is going to be very difficult to get people into the door at CBS All Access with just this episode. And on top of that, what I think is going to happen is the series will this season will end, and then they'll release it fully on Netflix for people to watch.
I hope so.
A couple months later, whatever. It'll go on a little in a couple months after the season's over, and then people will watch it, and maybe people will get into it by that point.
I hope so, because I think it'll be better. Because I rewatched the first episode this morning, and it's a lot better when I'm not watching it through the lens of an outsider.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like watching it just as myself, a lifelong Star Trek fan, it's a good episode.
Oh yeah, it's I don't have anything necessarily. I don't think there's anything's wrong with it. I just think we're looking for a race car, and we got just a
nice, Pinto.
Well, not that. No, but just a nice cruising car. You know, I mean, we're not like high octane, and I. And believe me, I'm the first one to say, I don't think Star Trek should be a Fast and Furious type of thing. But you just need to get people to say, I got to see more of this.
Yeah, to me, the first episode didn't have a hook.
Yeah, well,
the hook came in the second episode, which is what they put behind the paywall.
Right, right.
So that was kind of disappointing to me that they didn't make it just one giant pilot
right.
and give it to everybody to entice them to come see more.
Right.
Because I think that would have... worked a lot better. I haven't seen any statistics. I don't know what the numbers were.
I don't think anything is. It's too early to tell. I mean, this is day after. I mean, they might have it, but they probably won't release it for another week or so.
Or maybe later this afternoon by the time we're done. So yeah. who knows? Probably by the time this comes out tomorrow or later today.
Everything will be out. And
hopefully.
And we'll be talking about it on the Facebook page and whatever else. Should we get into kind of the episodes itself? Full spoilers alert that we're
full spoilers.
So we are going to talk about episode, the first episode and second episode,
or what we should call the pilot, both episodes together being the pilot, because it was a prologue.
Yeah, of course. So just let you know that we're going to get into full spoilers. If you care about that, if you know, you might want to shut off the podcast at this point. If you don't care about spoilers, if you just want to hear what we have to say, if you want to save your all-access money and just listen to us, okay, that's all right with us, too. That's how you want to live vicariously through our eyes. That's all right. So, but yeah, so shut it off
now.
All right. So,
Takuma dies.
Everyone died. So, we get the beginning as... the character, like we said, the Klingon, or what is his name?
Takuvma.
Yeah, but is he the captain of the Black Fleet?
He is the,
Didn't really give, like, his status, but he, like we said, he's like the David Koresh of their...
He's the cult leader. He's the one who believes he's Kalos Reborn.
Yeah, so, which is...
Kalos had hair, by the way, just throwing it out there.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into the Klingons, I'm sure we'll get into the Klingons, too, their look, but, basically... We get the shot of him. He's speaking full Klingon. I'm hoping he's speaking full Klingon from what we've heard before.
It sounds pretty Klingon.
I don't.
Although speak his teeth are so big, I think his pronunciation might be muffled.
Yeah,
because his teeth are big. I feel like he's having a really hard time speaking around those teeth.
The man's got large teeth. So, anyways, so he's kind of given a speech about to remain Klingon and the idea that this guy's got power within a group of people. Mm-hmm. And it, like we said, he's sort of like the cult leader, like David Koresh kind of character, you know.
Just full of whatever Klingons count as charisma.
It's unique. We're seeing a different look of the Klingons, as we've discussed.
Very Egyptian.
Very Egyptian. Very... they're not as wild, you know, like we see like in Deep Space Nine mm-hmm. and stuff like that. We don't get like a crazy warrior that just like headbanger Klingon. We have more of a solemn Klingon.
Yeah, they're like all religious zealots, just needing more from their leader. It's a strange mm-hmm. presentation of the Klingons.
And he alludes to the idea that when people say we come in peace, they mean the opposite.
Well,
which is he's obviously looking at the Federation.
He's like, this is a lie. Well, it's actually I don't know if they're doing this on purpose, but it kind of goes back to what Quark was saying, I think, to Garak. In the bar in that one episode of Deep Space Nine is like this root beer, and they try like, oh, it's repulsive, and he's like, yeah, but if you drink enough of it, you start to like it, just like the Federation. It's like they fear assimilation into the culture. It's like it's disgusting and weird at first, but after a while, it grows on you. And so I think that's what the Klingons are fearing with the "we come in peace." The "we come in peace" is the assimilation of the culture and the loss of identity of what makes you Klingon.
It's interesting.
And I feel like it's that same kind of vibe that Quark and Garak shared.
Yeah. I mean, there's this episode, there's a lot of things layered here that I think we could get really into, and maybe we will later on. But that okay. That being said, the so we get that scene, and then we jump to a different scene, a desert planet, where we have Sequoia Martin Green's character, Michael Byrne, and her captain.
Captain Giorgio.
Captain Giorgio. And they're walking through the desert, and they're going to unclog a well.
They're high-priority mission. You must go to the planet. Unclog the well.
Yeah. I'm not really sure.
The water table's been messed up on this planet, and they said they're not going to. The life forms won't last another 1,000 hours if there isn't water. So they just unclog a well.
A well.
Just a well. There's a storm coming, and so Captain Giorgio walks them in the shape of a Delta shield. I feel like it's weird that Michael Burnham's like, you walked us in a circle. And I'm like, those points are pretty sharp. I'm pretty sure you know you didn't walk in a circle.
Quick turn! Oh, by the way, just we didn't get into this. The episode's called The Vulcan Hello.
The Vulcan Hello. I like that.
So it's like...
It sounded dumb when I read it online, but...
It sounded sexual to me.
Two fingers.
I don't know. But
or the whole fest.
But anyways, so we see them, and there's a storm coming, and the captain, Captain Giorgio's, they can't make a signal through the storm to get their ship, the Shinzu, to come beam them up. And so she makes this big symbol, the
big Delta,
the Star Trek Delta symbol, and in the desert sand for the Shinzu to find. Okay, so that's interesting. I think it's seems highly improbable that you could actually make that shape unless she has some technology to guide her of what she's doing.
People make crop circles that are crazy intricate.
With that, like, large? That was pretty big. They didn't just, it's not like the shape of a house. It was like shape of a whole city block. So,
I mean, people do some amazing things with really basic things with crop circles. So I'm not putting this out of the realm of
possibility. So you're saying that Captain Giorgio makes crop circles when it's not her time. When she's not captaining, she goes down and she flattens.
She loves making crop circles.
She flattens cornfields.
But they're always deltas.
There's always deltas.
Always deltas.
Captain Giorgio! She ruined my crops. Paul Newman's going to break my legs.
And Randy Newman's going to watch.
All right. So they get beamed up. And because Captain Giorgio and the Michael Byrne, she doesn't understand what she's doing until at the very end, you know, you kind of get the feeling that Captain Giorgio is like playing a level a little bit higher than Michael Byrne's character. Like she just has a little bit of a higher understanding of things.
But she's also like got that experience. I mean, she's been a captain for ages. You know, and before she met Michael, and Michael's, you know, been with her for 7 years. So, and they said, they mentioned, I can't remember if it's the first or second episode, where she was like a wartime captain, where she's just seen lots and lots of death.
She does mention.
I think it's the second episode.
Yeah, I can't remember. But next we get, we jump from that scene to the Shinzu flying into warp, and we have the. Basically, Stardate is 12:07.3 Earth time, May 11th, 22:56. So, just so you
maybe that was the original release date, May 11th,
22:56.
Well, no, but I mean, like it was originally supposed to start in May.
By 22:56, I think we'll have Discovery ready. Well, and they're going to a relay, communication relay that's in a binary system, and you know, you get kind of this beautiful.
It's see-through.
You get this beautiful shot of, you know, the binary system and the star system
and the accretion disk that's forming the planets and whatnot.
And yeah, and then you have like, you know, the debris of asteroids and all that around there. So, while they're looking at this relay station, they notice it's damaged, and then they're going to they're obviously pulling it back to repair it. And at this point, this is where we get introduced to the third officer,
Lieutenant Saru.
Saru, right? And he, him, and Michael Burnham's character is basically in the same mindset that somebody took this out. This is too far out. It's not like something damaged it accidentally. Somebody damaged it to get their attention. And while, you know, they're talking about that, they basically they find another ship that's being hidden far within the
accretion disk.
Yeah, the accretion disk, and very, very far into the debris field. Hard to get to, and for some reason, Michael Burns decides she's going to take a spacesuit and fly by herself to check this out.
I'm
going to
go look at it.
And everyone on the internet goes, is there no shuttlecrafts in this time period?
They just showed a little shuttle thing that was tugging
exactly, but
the thing around.
Why would you take a spacesuit when you could take a shuttlecraft and not have to worry about the radiation?
Yeah, because the spacesuit looks cool. Got to show off the spacesuit.
Apparently, the spacesuit could only protect Michael Burns' character for about 20 minutes.
Before radiation will unspool her like noodles.
Yes. And so she goes out, is having a wonderful time. She discovers the ship, but then she loses contact with the Shinzu at that point. While she loses contact, she runs into a Klingon warrior on the...
The
torchbearer on the ship. And she accidentally kills it when it lunges at her to attack.
It hits the ground of the ship that they're standing on, and she charges her jetpacks at it, pulls the batleth out, then like sticks it through his back.
Yeah.
It was so quick the first time I didn't even realize like what had happened.
I didn't think she did it on purpose though. Did she?
She jetpacked him on purpose just to kind of knock him over.
Yeah, but I don't think she meant to kill him.
Yeah, I think the batleth was just in the way. Just the way
batleth just hit the wrong way.
It's huge. It's way bigger than a regular batleth.
So as she's killed the torchbearer, obviously
she gets knocked out because she wasn't really watching where she was charging at.
Right, and then they can't find her, but then she get their signal real quick, and then they bring her aboard, and she's being repaired in sick bay from her radiation sickness or whatever she got, the unspooling of her DNA. And she realized that she knew that this was a Klingon. This is a Klingon ship, and they had not seen the Klingons for a long time.
100 years. Ever since the human augment virus, pretty much.
And so she runs up, and she's still not even done with the treatment, and she's like, there's Klingons down there, tells the captain. And from there, they have to make a choice of what they're going to do. And the captain calls to Starfleet and lets them know that they've found Klingons, that they've taken out this relay station.
Yeah, so the fleet will be there in 2 hours. Don't do anything.
Don't do anything. Don't do anything stupid.
Michael gets repaired. She comes back whenever they turn on the big flashlight. The Klingons turn on this giant flashlight.
Well, that's the next thing, is that they decide... there's a whole scene about... there's another character who is going to...
take the mantle of the torchbearer.
Yeah, and he doesn't come from a house.
He is...
Interesting.
He is lower than Martok.
Yeah, interesting scene. So... they say who's the brother of the torchbearer,
yeah.
And they didn't. The person didn't want to come forward, I don't know if that's really where my talents lie.
He's like, yeah, I don't know if this Kalos thing is really working out for me.
Yeah. So
I don't want my house to die off. Right.
This albino shows up. And the albino has no house, and he says, I'll take over the torchbearer. And there's this whole thing, well, you have no honor, and how can you possibly be a torchbearer, blah, blah, blah.
I'm resistant to fire. I'm Khaleesi.
He does put his hand in the flames, and it was a dramatic scene for sure, you know, to see that, you know, that it was very interesting. But there wasn't... So he becomes a torchbearer, and what they do is they kick on this giant beacon, and it,
the thing they landed on earlier,
right? And it basically this is calling all the Klingon houses to one spot. Strange.
This just at the same time the human fleet is coming. They call for red alert right when before the light turns on. The beacon comes on, and Michael's like, "Hey, can I need to leave the bridge for a few minutes? Is that okay?" And she's like, it's relevant.
Yeah.
And she goes 1-900-SEREC.
She calls Daddy. Dad, I got a problem, Dad.
It's like 1-900 Sarah because he picks up immediately. That's his 900 number.
So she calls Sarah
for all your Pong Far needs
and basically says, "Hey, what do you do when you confront a Klingon? What did the Vulcans do? Because I know the Vulcans seem to have mastered the relations between themselves and the Klingons. And they said, we just kept beating the crap out of them until they start, like, talking to us." So, like, oh, okay.
And she goes up to the bridge and is like, we got a fire right now.
And the Captain Georgia says no. And then she keeps not... She's going against the captain's orders and not listening to the captain. She pulls him into her ready room. And then she
neck pinches her.
She Vulcan neck pinches. So, I mean, I understand she's raised as a Vulcan, Michael Burnham's character, but I find it hard to believe that you could know exactly how to do it and do it with the strength of a Vulcan, too. I always assumed that when Spock
I figure that's why, you know, Captain Georgia gets up so quickly.
Yeah.
She's not down for very long.
Yeah. So she's out, and then Michael Burnham's character is about to...
Lock and load all your weapons and stuff like that.
About to fire onto the ship, and that's when Captain Georgia comes out and says, delay that order, and she has her phaser trained right on her. And right then, all the different houses' ships all show up at once.
That's the end of the episode, guys.
That's the end of the episode. So if you saw that, that's as far as you got for the Vulcan Hello. So while it's not a bad episode and it has interesting points to it, I don't think you really get any delivery on anything other than just a very awesome-looking, you know, beginning.
It's like I feel like the promise of battle is what they hope is going to make you want to pay for it. But I think they needed to show more and tell less, I think.
Right.
With the first episode.
Well, then we get our second episode, The Battle at the Binary Stars. And this is, again, September 24th, 2017. I'm saying that because I'm not talking about anything in the 90s now.
Oh, yeah, so it's great.
I just enjoy saying
it was
2017.
It was yesterday.
It was
so awesome.
It was yesterday. And we pick off. We pick up exactly where we ended. The fleets are facing each other. And
well, no, it's just the
one ship. I'm sorry. The Shinzo again with the Klingon fleet. At this time, like I would be like the Shinzo would be like, I think I gotta go.
Because the Shinzo doesn't look very big.
It's not, and she even says it's an old ship.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so it's an interesting sequence where on the Klingon, where does it start? It starts off first on the Shinzo, basically.
She gets, Michael gets thrown in the brig.
Gets thrown in the brig, and they're waiting for the fleet to show up. And then we jump onto the Klingon ship, and that's where we get the he's talking to all the houses and saying that we found the common enemy. This is going to unite the Klingons again.
He's like, listen to what she says, because I think this point she hails them, and she's like, listen to what she says. She's gonna lie to you. She's gonna lie to you.
Gonna say,
and says, we come in peace.
He goes, there
it is. There it is. That's the lie.
He said it. She said it right there. So. And, you know, while that's a lot of – besides the one guy, Kor, says that he doesn't believe this guy, doesn't take any credence in what he says, everyone's like, well, I think – I want to hear this guy. I think this guy's got something to say. So the rest of the houses seem to be kind of with him.
Kind of with him, yeah.
Yeah. So at that point, then the rest of the Starfleet fleet shows up, and they're facing off, and like you said, Michael Burnham's character is in the brig at this point, so mm-hmm. She's totally out of the game. And this is where
the battle ensues.
The battle starts, and the Shinzo takes a pounding. It doesn't go very far.
No.
And what happens right after that is that the ship takes a huge chunk out of the hull. And Michael Burnham's
the helmsman came to talk to her, and he gets sucked out into space because the whole side of the ship.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Gets ripped off, and he goes flying out into space, and
he was about to let her go.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to let her go, and then he gets sucked out, and the only thing that's protecting her is the force field keeping the oxygen, and it's like at like what, like 15 or 14%.
Yeah, but power. The room she's in gets shrinks a whole lot because a lot of it got blown away.
Right, right.
Good thing she didn't get cut in half by the force field when it like shrunk.
Yeah. And there's even like an acknowledgement on the bridge that I think that killed Michael Burnham's character with a hit in the hall. So the fleet is getting just massacred. I mean, the Federation fleet is just getting walloped really hard. I didn't think they were going to come out on top at all. But then all of a sudden the Admiral
shows up.
Well, the Admiral shows up, which is interesting.
This is my favorite part of the episode. This is by far my favorite part of the episode, of the two-part episodes. The Admiral comes in, and he's like, he hails the Klingon fleet, and he's like, hey, look, I'm the Admiral. Mm-hmm. Hey, we've both lost a bunch of people. Let's talk about this. And Dekum was like, yeah, sure, let me send my envoy over. I'm going to send my envoy over.
Yeah, he's, all right, we'll wait for you. Sure, yeah, yeah. Well, whenever he comes, yeah, that's
just
great.
Just come right on by. And so, like, Dekum was like, yeah, my ships, he's like, turns to the holograms of the Klingons, like, you know, I have cloaking ships, just FYI, guys.
Yeah.
And like, the Admiral's talking with Giorgio, and his hologram starts bouncing all over the place, like, what's going on? Also, they're getting saved from crashing into an asteroid because the Shinzu's powers, like navigational powers,
yeah,
gone.
Shinzu's messed up.
Shinzu's messed up, so his ship is trying to pull them out. But the envoy is a cloaked ship that looks like a boat,
and just
with a wedge on it,
and it just starts ramming
into the Europa.
Yeah,
and it just like cuts the hull in half. It's just like it's like a a Klingon ship sandwich.
Yeah.
made that the saucer its bread.
So it's like cutting through like a pizza. And so the Admiral ship didn't make it. And
well, the Admiral just like self-destructs. It's like, okay, they're going to play this game. We're just going to like... I thought that was kind of strange for an Admiral to just call for self-destruct immediately.
Well, right.
Because they made it sound like it was self-destruct, not like an accidental core breach.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. But anyway, so they're pretty. I mean, the fleet's pretty messed up. But then all of a sudden, the Klingon fleet just all kind of takes off. Besides the one black fleet ship,
the Sarcophagus ship.
Yeah, and it's still there. On top of that, we get the Michael Burnham's character realizes that she's not going to live very long in that field because of power.
She has a long conversation with the computer about ethics.
Yeah, strange. Like, wouldn't it be smart just to open the shield and the other shield and let me jump out between the two thing? And it's like, well, you have like a 41% chance of making it. He says, I'll take those odds, you know.
But it's like a long conversation. It's longer than it needed to be.
It was interesting that it was an interesting conversation, but it didn't – I don't know why they had to really do that. But whatever. I sort of understand they were trying to say, like, this is her way of hacking the computer.
I guess, but
– Well, anyways – Michael Burnham's character gets out. She runs up to the bridge.
So not only can Kirk talk a computer in circles.
Like Michael Burnham. So she goes up to the she goes back up to the bridge and says, "Look, this guy is if we kill him, he'll become like a martyr.
A martyr.
And we have to capture him and totally humiliate
disgrace him.
Yeah, in front of all the Klingons. This is the only way to take care of it. So." Michael Burnham character and Captain Giorgio beams aboard the Sarcophagus ship and decides they're going to try to capture him. They beam over. They kill a bunch of Klingons. Unfortunately, they kill what's his name? Tuvkum.
T'Kuvma actually stabs Giorgio through the heart.
Yeah, Captain Giorgio doesn't make it.
And then you know Michael Burnham shoots him right through the back. It's like it kills him, like right underneath like the chin. Like,
why didn't
right
you stun him? You could have stunned him and got him out of there. I don't know.
She's got all this baggage with Klingons because they killed her parents, and that's what the couple of flashbacks talk about, how you know she was raised by Sarek, and her best friend for the past 7 years just got murdered in front of her eyes, you know, again. So
right,
it's just kind of like I feel like it was like a self fulfilling prophecy that she kind of did. We're like, oh, if we kill him, he'll be like, you know, this.
Yeah.
This profit or something.
I have some issues with it, but anyway, so from there they decided they.
Saru beams her back without the body.
You know, we skipped the one point is that they were beaming all the, or
they're tractoring all the
dead bodies.
The Klingon ship was tractoring all the dead bodies,
and they put the torpedo warhead onto one of them. And so when they beamed aboard, the ship blew apart. So
they disconnected the head from the rest of the ship, which is like what I've always wanted to do to a Klingon ship. It's just like they've got that thin little neck.
Right. This one is not as thin as a D7, but yeah. Anyway, so it was all interesting, and then so the ship's destroyed. The Klingon commander Kalis,
the Kalis reborn, is dead.
Yeah, and that kind of just wraps up the show. Then the only thing we get next is that Michael Burnham character is
she's like in this dark ops like debriefing where she's.
And she's just basically going through charge. She's going to life in
court martial. Yeah,
life imprisonment. That's what they said. There's like,
yeah.
So, and that's as far as we see. I mean, obviously they gave us what was going to happen next. That, you know, like the teaser for the third episode.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you know, that's where you left it. So, still no Discovery during this whole point.
Nope, not a bit.
And
the only place you see the Discovery so far is in the opening.
I mean, sort of working a prequel of all Michael Burnham, like who she is.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, she doesn't totally play by the rules, but yet she's super logical in a lot of sense. In a lot of ways, she's not totally wrong. I just don't think she has the experience to measure her thoughts and her beliefs.
Yeah, because she's like super like, oh, I'm trying to save everybody. I'm trying to save everybody, but I'm like. You're going to take an old ship and try to, like, just fire at the Klingons and hope they don't destroy you? I'm not sure how that's going to save everybody.
And not just that, if she did fire upon that ship and started a fight already, the Klingon fleet would have showed up, like, seconds later and just obliterated them. Dave, your thoughts of Star Trek Discovery, the first two episodes?
It's a good start if you've seen them both.
Mm-hmm.
They're beautifully done. The production's good. The acting's great. Like, I was shocked that they killed T'Kuvma. I knew Michelle Yeoh was going to die. Like, there was no way she was going to make it out because, you know, I mean.
She had red shirt painted all over.
Well, you know, like, whatever. The Shenzo's not the main ship. You know, the Discovery's the main ship. And then you've also got the, in the opening credits, she's a special guest star.
Yeah.
That screams, I'm not going to be around very long. Even before that, I figured she was going to die within the first couple episodes. So Michael could move over to the Discovery at some point.
Right.
So that wasn't a surprise. But T'Kuvma dying was a huge surprise. So I thought he was like the main bad.
Right.
So, because, I mean, that's the only Klingon you've seen a lot of.
It's funny in the trailers. IMDb, Kor is the main Klingon that's kind of like prominently shown.
Oh yeah, he's probably going to be the main.
T'Kuvma is like not hardly. It's like way down in the listing. So,
yeah,
I'm just saying. You know, it's.
I haven't looked at the IMDb on.
I'm just saying. It's just like that's interesting. Anything else?
It's a tease of what's to come because like it's all just kind of. Even the second episode, all the action and all the stuff going on, it's still ramping up to what we're going to be really getting. It's definitely the feel of intro. Even after the second episode, it still feels like an intro. It still doesn't feel like it's gotten started yet.
Okay.
But I really feel, like I said, in their pre-spoiler parts, I really feel like this should have been aired together to make maximum impact and get more people on board.
Yeah.
Because I'm scared it's not. That's my biggest fear and takeaway from seeing this. I just feel like the part they gave away for free wasn't enough. Right. I hope I'm wrong. But yeah, let me know if you think I'm wrong. I would love if you guys thought the first episode was great enough to make you want to jump in on it.
Yeah, you're going to sign up for that all access.
What about you?
Like I said, beginning, beautiful, good acting. I think the writing was a little clunky. I think... The opening scene between Captain Georgiou and Michael Burnham's character on the planet, I felt strongly that they're holding the hand of the listener, like, oh, and this race, they only live, like, they have this life cycle, and like, this is the reason why we're on this planet. Like, the way they're talking to each other,
mm-hmm.
It's like, they would know this already. Like, why are we talking about this like that? You know, it's just the dialogue was I understand they're trying to tell the viewer what's happening at that very moment, but there's a lot of stuff. It's like, okay, come on. I'm not a moron.
Yeah.
You could just say, like, you could phrase it differently, or you could do a captain's log and explain the whole damn thing, like, within, like, a half a minute, like 30 seconds. You could have it all kind of described instead of making some weird dialogue between each other.
And then the dialogue between the two of them could have been more personal instead of, like,
right.
random.
Yes.
Why are we here?
Facts of the mission. Like, so anyways, I thought that was kind of weird. I thought that was kind of clunky writing. The pacing with the Klingons seemed like a snail's pace. While it was beautiful to see, and I enjoyed seeing everything about it, I felt that, you know, like when they first come across when they're face to face with the Shinzu, it just seemed like they're just sitting in space facing each other forever without like making
anything. Nothing happening.
And it's just like, what? Like, when does that ever happen in, like, any Star Trek episode, you know?
Never.
It was just weird. So
because Klingons are always so fast to act. They're so...
This is why this Klingons is different. So it was very interesting in some ways. So that all being said, I didn't hate anything. There was nothing I, like, despised or thought was terrible. I just think that I think the writing could have been compressed a little bit or just refined just slightly. I'm not sure how.
I totally agree with that because this is only a 15-episode arc.
Yeah.
And for a 15-episode arc, I feel like they wasted a lot of time with nothing. And there's little bits of nothing in the first two episodes, like that overly long talk with the computer when she was trying to get out of the cell.
Stuff like that.
It just felt long. The bickering between Saru and Michael in the first episode, like the guy making a spoof of, like, the captain of an airplane talking about the temperature outside. And, like,
all right, right,
you're,
yeah.
Like, it was just weird. Like, yeah. It didn't feel like all the sounds, all the sound effects sounded like Star Trek. But just the way characters talked, it didn't always feel like Star Trek. It felt weird.
Yeah, they felt a little looser in some parts. And maybe, you know, they're trying to bring it up to, you know, today's dialogue a little bit or how people talk to each other. Here's my biggest gripe with this, and think about every pilot that we ever got of Star Trek, you know, from the original series, the Cage, even, I guess, Mantrap, to the Farpoint. They're all based on, like, going and exploring of some sort, you know. This is pretty much just a prelude to war. And, I mean, the show's called Star Trek Discovery. And
yes.
I kind of would think, like, shouldn't we be discovering things and inspiring people to want to go into space and all the cool stuff that could be happening? And it's like, oh, when you go out in space, you're going to go to war.
Klingons.
And I...
Well, this season's not going to be all about war.
I don't know. Is it? I don't know. I got this feeling that...
From what the writers and stuff have said, the first season's about war, and they're going to try and, like, make sure the war is done with, so that by the time the second season rolls around, they can have a more hopeful viewpoint.
I don't know. I felt really like, is this where our psychology and social culture is now, that, like, we have to get people interested by showing war? You know? I mean,
Well, our meetup with Robbie the other day.
I know.
Every single show's about war, this,
yeah,
war, that.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about, you know, like SEAL team.
Everything.
I mean, I've watched it on CBS, and the commercials were all about the CBS, like,
yeah,
the SEAL team.
The lineup.
The SWAT thing. There was
so much self-promotion. There wasn't a whole lot of regular commercials.
Yeah, I mean, there was only a few medical commercials for drugs.
And death wasn't a side effect on them. I was super surprised. I was calling for death as one of those. Because I always think it's funny. It's like, oh, look, take this medicine. It'll help with your depression, but you'll probably die.
You might die.
Oh, well, that's great.
So I walked away from it, and I'm like, I can't really complain. And I was, that day, I was pretty, before that, I was kind of like, I was all right with it no matter what, but I was like getting like giddy like a kid like on Christmas or like yeah, we're gonna like it's gonna be awesome. And I walked away from it not feeling like it was awesome, but I felt conflicted because while I did enjoy it, I don't have any like really anything terrible to say about it. It's just like the psychology or the philosophy behind it is what bothered me more than anything. That, I mean, we're not going and discovering new planets and new solar systems and new races and, you know, talking. It just felt more just like we're just going to, you know, go to war. And I don't know. I found it very – I was – like I said, I walked away kind of conflicted, tell you the truth. I didn't feel like I was discovering anything.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way. Like it's it just feels very – prologue-y. It even after both episodes, even as action-packed as the second episode was, it just kind of feels like a breath. Mm-hmm. And you're waiting for it to exhale and waiting for like what's to come. Like it's still like, so I guess it's good that, you know, I'm at the point where like I want to know what's going to happen now after seeing the first two episodes. Mm-hmm. But the first episode I wasn't feeling that, but the second episode I definitely was feeling it a lot more. Mm-hmm. It did feel weird. It did feel weird. Star Trek, there's a lot of Star Trek-y stuff in there.
Yeah.
It's very Star Trek. It's also kind of not Star Trek in a way.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll get more Star Trek-y as we get on the main ship and stuff starts happening. But, like, you know, all the characters we met, you know, I mean, Saru's definitely going to be on there. Doug Jones is the second.
Yeah.
Second name that's listed, so he's definitely going to be on the ship.
Right, right.
So we'll have some of the characters that we know.
I agree. The whole thing is, while it's beautiful and it's been well crafted, I'm always taking issue with the writers. I just feel these writers are just not doing their job, not well enough for what. And I think they did pretty good, pretty mm-hmm. good. I mean, I just think they could have tightened it up a little bit. Maybe they had to do other things, reasons why they did things. I don't know. Maybe things will be more clear by the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, we're taking, I guess, such a microscopic look at it, the first two episodes, which are barely even, like, what the show's about. Like, this is all just, like...
The backstory. Of Michael
Burns' character. It's just two episodes of backstory. So, like, whenever people talk shit about her, and then the next couple episodes, you'll know why.
Yeah, so, you know...
But then you'll also know her version of the story versus what people are going to be saying about her. So I think, in context, this will work a whole lot better than it does right now on its own.
Yeah, and the other thing is, so that set aside, the whole – there's been such a huge – and I've been seeing a lot. I don't know if you've been seeing it, but the whole backlash of this being like, you know, some social justice warrior TV show version of Star Trek, I do not see that whatsoever.
No, I don't see that.
And if you're walking away with that, you have like such a strange filter of in life, because it really doesn't have that. We're seeing – well-crafted characters, and I think Michael Burnham's character is going to get more and more interesting. The fact that she's a woman and she's black, you know what? Who cares? This is Star Trek. This is where Star Trek skin color and your gender and all that stuff does not matter. This is you are who you are because of what your deeds are.
So yes.
Whether you're Captain Kirk, Picard, you know, Cisco, whoever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't matter. So I don't understand all this BS I keep seeing online. I just wish it would go away because I don't understand what that hate's about. Just stop it with that. That's got to go.
For sure.
The show does have some issues canon-wise, I think, you know, like the holograms. I understand why they put it there because it's much more interesting than just seeing a view screen. All right. You know, still not my thing, but...
It makes me wonder, like, how come the doctor was stuck in sick bay if there's holomiddos, like, parts of the ship?
Yeah, but you know, that
they're more ethereal holograms than what the doctor was.
Projections, yeah. Kind of thing. Secondly,
I always thought it was funny. Does Sarek have a room exactly like Michael Burnham's?
I know.
So he can like lean on the desk the same way. I'm like, that was weird.
That was it. Obviously, the Klingons, we saw the house, the different houses of the Klingons. And honestly, I did not see any of the Klingons look anything like traditional Klingons. Like, I thought we'd see the people from the Black Fleet, and they were going to be
the cultish, weird looking ones,
and they're but all
they
there.
All, they all look like that. And Cole is from the House of Kor.
Yeah.
And we know Kor has hair.
Right.
I don't know if he's Kor's brother or Kor's cousin.
Or great-grandfather or whatever, but...
Well, I mean, they're...
Well, whatever they are.
Only 10 years away from Kirk,
yeah.
So...
Yeah, but my point only being is that's my thing. So I wasn't really... I kind of felt lied to.
What do you mean?
About the Klingons. They're like, well, this is just like a... These are a group, a small group on their own, and I kind of felt lied to.
Well, I saw a clip. They were doing all these like things from the press junket. I was watching them on, I think, TrekMovie.com or TrekNews.com. I can't remember which one. I was watching them yesterday, and they talked to the two guys who did the makeup, and they said none of the Klingons will have hair this entire season.
You know, it's fine that they're going to reimagine it for me. Like, I'm like, okay, you're reimagining the whole thing. Fine, you know, obviously Star Trek has to evolve in some ways. I kind of feel like they're distinctly lying to us just to get us not to shut up about things. Like everything I've heard so far was like, no, these are special. They've been hidden away for 200 years. Nobody's seen them. They've been hiding kind of like in their own
kind of felt like that too.
And now we're seeing like, yeah, they have been hiding away, but they all look like that, you know? And
it's just, I mean, like, why are, I mean, we should at least see, like, one, like, the House of Kor. Like, maybe they should have Kor show up. Like, find someone who looks like that actor and just give him eyebrows and a goatee and no forehead, because Kor had no forehead at that age of time. Like, if Cole is from the House of Kor, yeah. he's a brother, cousin, sister, something
right.
to Kor.
Right.
So, I mean, like... Why can't we see a smooth-headed Klingon? I would love to see that because it'll work within the dynamic because we did have smooth-headed Klingons in this period of time.
Right, right.
I mean, just even if they had eyebrows, like that would be fine. Like, I mean, they don't have to have like heavy metal hair for me to be like, oh, that's a Klingon. Like, you know, even just subtle things like their giant eyebrows in the TOS era.
Right.
I mean, they always had big eyebrows all throughout, but I mean, at least in the TOS era, that was the one thing that made them stick out. They had giant eyebrows.
Right. So, all that said, I mean, it's not... You weren't going to lose me on that.
No. I mean, like, there's... The only thing, like, it would have, like... they're not going to lose me no matter what, because we're going to be talking about it.
Right.
We're going to be talking about it until their break, so... Yeah. We're talking Discovery until their break in like either November or December,
whenever
that is.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just I just want them to be honest, and like we were talking about Into Darkness, like how they were saying, you know,
Khan wasn't in
for all that time, but it was Khan. It's like, yeah. why would you even say that and do that? Just be honest with us. You don't have to give away the whole thing. You know, like when we saw pictures of the Klingons. In that, like, food line.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's like, no, that's not Klingons.
It's
like, come on. Just say it. Just say those are Klingons. Let people deal with it. We'll process it. So...
Because, yeah, I mean, like, the makeup's beautiful. The Klingons look awesome. My only gripe is the hair. And it's just, like, hair has been always such a big part of Klingons. We've never seen bald Klingons ever in canon until now.
Right.
Except for... In the JJ movie. Right. But even in the JJ movie, like, it panned across the other, Into Darkness, it panned across other Klingons, and you saw hair spilling out from underneath the helmets.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it's not, I mean, Chang was mostly bald, but he had a little ponytail, yeah. He had eyebrows, and he had a goatee.
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, like, just no facial hair at all. It's just weird. I mean, even if they just had a beard and no hair on their head, that would be fine.
Everything else seemed pretty good. I am worried about... The direction, like I said, about the philosophy of Star Trek, if it's getting lost. But
I think that's why they said they want to have the war over in the first season, at the end of the first season, and then do something different next season.
Right.
So they can get back to the philosophy of Star Trek.
Because
that's what I've been hearing and seeing from the writer's room and, you know, different interviews that I've been reading and looking at and watching online.
But it's definitely worthwhile. I mean, if you're a Trek fan, you should be watching this. You should be tuned in.
It's the first new Trek in over a decade. Like, it's good.
It's very good, and it's better than all the other episodes visually than you'll ever see. I don't know how the stories will go. I don't know how the characters will develop, but it's definitely far more interesting than Encounter at Farpoint or, you know, all the other ones. I forgot the first episode of Deep Space Nine, but, you know.
Emissary, I think?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, Emissary, while it tells a lot of, like, has the intro of Sisko and the battle of
Wolf 359,
yeah, and all that stuff, which that's just fun to see, but this is far more visually arresting.
Oh, for sure.
And I just don't know if the characters will have that oomph that they all we got with the Picard and the Siskos and, you know, and Janeways, like all the you know, we got so attached to these characters. Will we get the same emotional attachment, or will it be like,
especially with seasons being so short?
Yeah, so
it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. I mean, like, I know you, I was hoping to be more squee for this episode. I'm definitely a lot more reserved, kind of like the Klingons.
yeah.
It's just I want to see how it unfolds. But I mean, like, to anyone who thought this was not Star Trek or, you know, not prime canon, like, they did everything they could, other than the way the Klingons look, to make it, like, feel like Star Trek. Because I mean, like, the dialogue at times is very Star Trek-y. The sounds,
right.
Sounds everywhere are Star Trek-y.
Right.
The only thing that doesn't feel Star Trek-y maybe is like the visually are the holograms, and the way the Klingons look.
Right.
Other than that, it feels very, and the Klingon ships, because
yeah, obviously.
There's only a couple that look, they hinted at being Bird of Prey, so, but all the other ones, like, I don't even know. Those don't cling on at all to me.
Well, in the ship for the Black Fleet, he said that was, like, an old ship that was just, like, abandoned from his family.
Well, yeah, the main one, yeah, yeah, like, sarcophagus ship.
And he brought it back.
But all the ones that jumped in.
Oh, yeah, they didn't look any, and they looked all weird, so. And they all had different looks, too. They weren't all, yeah, like the sarcophagus ship. So, I do think this is a viable show. I don't think CBS All Access is going to be a thing in the next year or so, unless something dramatically changes. I don't see people signing up for Star Trek and making CBS All Access something viable.
I don't know. Like, I saw it hiccup a couple times last night, so I don't know if their servers aren't good or their servers are just getting overloaded.
Well,
I mean, it didn't grind to a halt, but, like, there was a couple spots where it just went gray for a couple seconds and it picked back up. So I don't know.
Right.
I'm not sure what that was about.
Right.
But, I mean, maybe it's a good sign. Maybe they did have enough people or a lot of people sign in.
Right.
Who knows? I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the numbers go. And I hope the numbers are better than what I'm thinking, because I just feel like the first episode didn't come out of the train, like, full speed ahead, but second episode definitely did a lot to make me feel a lot better about it.
It did. I think the Vulcan hello was a little clunky, but the next episode was far more fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of action.
A lot of things kind of came together. And, like, it's weird. It's like, you know, they always the writers always talked about the third episode being the second pilot. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you're going to have to get reintroduced to all your new main characters. Right. You got Captain of the Discovery, Captain Lorca.
Yeah.
We've got Saru. We've got Anthony Rapp's character who we haven't even seen
yet. There's a ton of characters we haven't seen.
A ton of characters we haven't even seen yet. Like, we haven't even met most of the main characters yet. Right. We've just met pretty much Saru and Michael.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
Right. Well, we're going to find out.
It'll be exciting, and I hope you guys are excited, too. I hope you guys enjoyed it and are living vicariously through us watching this.
Sad people.
And, you know, if you're liking it, if you thought the first episode was amazing, let us know. We definitely want to have as much Discovery conversation as we can. So, anyone who thought differently than we do, let us know. Talk to us. Email us. We are so excited to hear what other people think about the show. This is the first new Star Trek in over a decade. This is what we've been waiting for. And it's so exciting going forward. You know, I'm sorry if it sounded like we're a little bit down on this episode. But, I mean, it was good. We enjoyed it. It was just, maybe we went in expecting too much, and maybe the bar wasn't as high as we hoped.
I agree. I think we were all wanting so much out of this show, and while they didn't disappoint me in any facet, just I think there were things. I'm just worried that it won't. We won't get that far with this iteration of Star Trek. That's my worry.
Yeah, because I mean, it needs to get do good on All Access. They can have enough people watching, so they can make more.
Again, we've said over and over again, All Access is just a terrible idea. It's not going to reach the masses that we were hoping. If they put it on Netflix or on a Hulu, that's a different story. You know,
because millions of people already subscribed to that kind of thing. You know,
and they still get their damn money. So, like, what's going on? So, yeah. Anyways. Definitely let us know what you think. If you've seen the first episode, if you've seen the second, both of them, you know, if you think it was terrible, if there's things that you really have issues with, definitely let us know. We'll talk about them. Email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com.
I just want like a short spinoff where like a really short, like two or three episodes where it's like the Spock's Partridge Family, where it's like Sarek and Amanda, and they've got Spock who's half Vulcan and half human, Michael who's full human, and then they got Cybok, the super emotional full Vulcan. Like, yeah. It's just like...
Sarek was a terrible father. He was a terrible father.
It's like, did Cybok and Michael hang out all the time? Did they switch, you know?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on with all that. But, yeah, definitely let us know what you think. Any feedback that you – if you love the show, if you think we're crazy and that this show is the best thing that ever happened to Star Trek, you know. Definitely let us know what you think about it.
Yeah, we're cautiously optimistic at this point.
I would say that's the fair assessment, cautiously optimistic. We want it to be great. We hope it's going to be great. But we're still a little bit leery because we've been screwed over before with Enterprise and other things. So,
yeah, we just want this to be the best it can be.
All right, exactly.
So for all those emails and what you think, it's email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can also send us voice messages. We can play those on the air and respond to them. Those are always fun to do.
Hit us back on Twitter.
On Twitter, at Synthaholic Duo for the show. I'm at David_J_Duncan.
I'm at Blackbird2004.
Check out our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups@Synthaholics. You can join in the conversation there. All sorts of stuff will be happening. I'm sure people will be posting about what they think there.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they haven't already.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely go on to the Facebook group. We have a great group just really coming together, and everyone seems to be having a good time. Yeah, chime in what you think. The other things is if you have a little bit of money you could throw our way, we definitely appreciate anything you could help the podcast with. You can go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics. You can give a buck a month. What's a buck a month? You could definitely send us a buck and help our podcast keep on recording and keep on talking to you about all sorts of...
Keep on keeping on.
Yes. And then also write and review onto the Apple iTunes app, if you could, 5 stars preferably, and obviously a nice little comment. Help us to get seen more by other viewers when they're doing searches.
Absolutely. So thank you all so much for listening. We hope you're ready for more Discovery.
Because you're going to get
it. You're going to be getting lots of Discovery until it goes on break.
For sure.
Thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper. Mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Hot Michael. In her bikini bandage.
So let's,
It was an eensy weensy teeny weeny plain brown bikini.
Plain brown.
Plain tan. I don't know what color it was. It was the same color as the title screens.